All right, it is 9:30. It is time for the Friday Night Hangout. This is where we grab a brew, shoot the breeze, and interact with you live on the internet. We're here live, starting our fall schedule. We're back to weekly. Had a nice little summer break doing bi-weekly, but now we're back by popular demand. So as we get all settled in for this week, we'll explain how this works. You can watch us live here on YouTube or replay DVR style. You can listen to us on replay and on podcast on your favorite MP3 player over the weekend and such. You can comment via Twitter. We have the hashtag. You can send us a tweet. You can comment via YouTube, Google+, and, of course, on avoidingchores.com. We'll do a quick round of introductions, and we'll start in no particular order. We'll go all the way to Wallace, Nova Scotia, where we have Keith Elliott Stone with us tonight. Switching all the way over to Cape Breton, we get Carrie with us here.
Hello.
Join the brew. And, of course, we're switching back to Halifax. We got Todd the beer dude with us tonight. And I am here also in Halifax with you this evening. So let's start off the way that we usually start off, boys, which is what we are drinking tonight. Let's start again with Keith. Keith, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I got this from Dean2K on Twitter. He brought me some beer a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
It's a clone of Maine's Rising Tide Daymark Pale Ale.
Oh, nice.
It was very nice.
Dean from Sackville, New Brunswick, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. Dean2K,
all right.
Yep.
All right, so how was it?
Really nice.
Excellent.
Yep, it's got that hoppy flavor on the front. I really like it.
All right, right on. Carrie, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking a Dutch beer. That's Grolsch.
The Grolsch, yes.
Grolsch.
You
I
like
never
it?
I had one. I like it. I've never had one before. I've been hauling many times, but I only end up drinking Heineken when I'm there.
Oh, okay.
So, it's different than a Heineken, but it's still tasty. It's not old, so it's good.
Good. All right. Excellent. Good stuff. Todd, what are you drinking tonight, Todd?
I'm drinking a Goose Island Honkers Ale.
Oh.
It's a English-style bitter.
English-style bitter. How is it?
It's not bad. Goose Island, you can't go wrong.
Excellent. All right, I am drinking tonight Nova Scotia beer. We haven't had, or I haven't had one in a little while. Sea Level, their blueberry pale ale. This is their regular pale ale that you have, but with some fermented blueberries from down the road. So this is a 5% brew, and for those who maybe see the camera, I don't know if you can see that or not.
It's an interesting color, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a brown. It's definitely a mashed purple, from the blueberries there. So if you leave a blueberry in a jar of water and the water suddenly becomes kind of purple blue tint, that's pretty much what you get there. So very nice beer. It's nice. There's only one other blueberry beer that I like, which is the Smash Blueberry Strong Ale from Shipyard, Todd, that we tried a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That's the only one that I like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and this one here, I like this a lot because it's not the extract. It's the actual real blueberry. So good stuff from Sea Level. All right, looks like I've got a number of people joining us tonight, so thank you, everybody, for watching. So just a reminder that you can comment live to us, and we'll read your comments here via Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or avoidingchores.com. Got the boys monitoring the comment windows there, and we can start off our topics. You can follow along by looking at the topics in the YouTube comments or the show topics on avoidingchores.com. Let's start off with the good one here, because it's been in the news. Let's talk about fracking. Fracking in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And there were a whole bunch of articles about this, how it's going on in both provinces. But basically, we have the report that finally came out in Nova Scotia to give us a direction, what's going on. And the government basically punted it to the next guy. No real fracking in Nova Scotia, but yet in New Brunswick, It is the main piece of the election platform for the Conservatives. Fracking, yes, because New Brunswick needs some money. They're broke. Guys, I know we didn't really talk about fracking before, but for me, I'm kind of for... Well, I think we did talk about it, but I'm kind of for the fracking, but the problem is whatever they want to set up is right... it's in an area that people notice, and I've always been saying, why don't you just set up a couple of those, you know, wells in areas that nobody goes to in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. There's a few areas people can go and nobody would know any better. Because I think the two wells they want to propose in Nova Scotia is in Keith's neck of the woods.
Well, there's two wells currently active in Nova Scotia in DeBert, and they have to truck the water to New Brunswick.
Now, they have two other... I was reading one of the articles there. They were saying that the two of the wells, one of them is in Malagash, and the other one is... I forget the name of it, but it's closer to Amherst. So basically, both of them are along Highway 6.
Yeah.
Between Tanamagoosh and Amherst. So, you know, you've driven past there. You know, there's...
Once you get into residential areas, I have an issue with that. If it's not in a residential area, you know, drinking water sources.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's all about optics too, right? If you're gonna have this where people can see it in their backyard, nobody's gonna want it. I would want it in my backyard, to be honest with you.
But if it's not
near a drinking water source, then, I mean, as far as how much damage it does, you know, I don't know. But if it screws up, if it's gonna screw up your well water, there's no way to fix that. You know, it's not like the tide can come and fix it, or it's going to get carried away in the air.
Yeah.
So it's definitely about optics as far as them not allowing fracking for now. It's, you know, they said that they may in the future, and this is a good way to keep people happy while they look at it a little further. And if they do make a decision to allow fracking, they can say that they looked at it, you know, six different angles before they came to a conclusion. And whatever the decision is, nobody's going to be happy, or not everyone's going to be happy anyway, so.
No, I think hats off to the government. They said they were going to do something, they did it, and they actually listened. They didn't back off on it, so they did what they said they were going to do. Whether it was right or wrong, I don't know. But, the whole thing about seismic testing, and that makes me nervous in Nova Scotia, because, you know, the water kind of sits like in a big bathtub. Like in Penobscot, they did a seismic test there, and everybody lost their water in the whole area. Like it broke through, and all the water drained down into an old mine.
Mm.
And that's it. The water's gone. It's not coming back. So, you know, I'm a little nervous, like Keith, around residential areas.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of areas, you know. Put them around the windmills. That's all used now anyway. Nobody wants to be near them, so. Yeah,
exactly.
Stick some wells in there.
Well, you know, like the example I think we mentioned when it was in New Brunswick, you know, they had the company decided, even though it's high concentration, you know, they wanted to set up wells across the road from Kuchibugwak, you know, a prime area that, you know, people are going to notice and not, they're going to protest, and there's quite a bit of history for that. Instead of going right straight back dab in the middle of the province where they have all those open strip mines, that nobody talks about.
Yeah. Well, you and I both know there's a lot of area, like especially you get above north of Fredericton.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, the Trans-Canada Highway, there's a lot of places where there's nobody for miles and miles, no water, no nothing.
Well, people need to click on the Google Earth and see, you know, the tracks, either, you know, the strip mines or the woodlots and stuff like that, that don't know what's going on. And same thing in Nova Scotia. Now, the area of Nova Scotia is probably a little bit smaller. I would say that no man's land between Sherbrooke and Antigonish and Truro, that little area there, I think there's a... Basically, look at the cell phone reception map.
Well, Nova Scotia pretty much live around the edge.
Yeah, so...
A few minor exceptions, but...
Yeah. You know, I would assume that kind of stuff goes around the fault lines. But anyway, it's kind of interesting how... You know, how Nova Scotia made their decision. New Brunswick is clearly a different decision.
Well, it depends on the election, Jim.
Well, was there any doubt that the PCs in New Brunswick were going to get, you know, kicked out rather harshly? So
no, I don't think so. It's kind of another Dexter situation.
Well, speaking of Dexter situation, let's move on quickly to the second topic, and then we'll get into some comments here. Graham Steele finally launches his book, his tell-all book. His book that he's been basically teasing for months, ever since he won his CBC analyst gig after the provincial elections. The climax of the book is how, or the reason why he suddenly quit being the finance minister. And did you guys read that excerpt, or basically the reason why he quit?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I read a couple reasons he gave there. It was, you know.
I pretty much called it. I said he was a man of high ethics. Dexter isn't.
Well, yeah. When he said Dexter said one thing and did another, I mean, it's pretty hard to do a job when that's what you're dealing with.
Yeah, especially you're in a high pressure situation like him in finance, going to a union saying no and then being the rug yanked out from under you, it makes you look like you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why the big thing about waiting, holding on for this for like almost 3 years though? Or 2 years? Like, you know, I don't know. It seems like he kind of held on to the secret. You know, if it was, you know, high ethics and stuff like that, you know, he'd be up kind of straightforward and say, union's getting too much money, it's messing up our books. You know, that which was essentially the crux of the argument, right?
Yeah.
You know, why, you know, what was that really worthwhile to hold on to a tell-all book? You know, even though that we know that, you know, at the end of the day, the NDP were giving out checks like it was nobody's business, right?
So, yeah, that deal with the NSGU, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course now they're talking about, you know, public wage freeze for the civil servants. And some other stuff that's going on to try to curtail the increases, because based on those deals here. So, you know, I don't particularly mind you know, index increases and stuff like that. But you know the type of stuff that the nurses got, the type of increases they got, they, you know, they had a pretty rich deal at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't had anything close to cost of living in 10 years, so I've fallen behind every year.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Wages in general, as a generalization, are staying with the cost of living, for sure.
Now, somebody mentioned in the last 2 years or 3 years, the nurses, you know, they end up with a 6 or 7% wage increase, but the inflation rate for those 2 years, you know, cumulatively was like 5% increase. So I think the point the person was trying to make was that it may have appeared to be a rich increase. They're barely ahead of the curve anyway because of the you know, the inflation rate and how expensive everything got in the last couple of years.
But that's the thing. I mean, we talk about wages not staying with the cost of living, but I mean, people can't afford much more than the basics anymore, you know. Yep. And, any luxuries or taxes really, really cripple you. So it's what do those wages come out of? It's that vicious cycle right now.
Unless you're the CEO of Mira, then you get a 54% increase this year.
Yeah, that comes out of our pockets, and that's why.
But no, guys, he has an important job. He makes sure the lights are on.
Yeah.
He goes to bed.
And if they aren't, blame Arthur.
That's right.
Yeah.
We probably should do maybe a Christmas episode and all the excuses Nova Scotia Power gives when the power's out.
Yeah, salty fog.
Yeah, two years from now, they can still blame Arthur.
Raccoons.
All right, let's get to the comments. We'll give a chance for the boys to reload the pages. We're monitoring on Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, and of course on voidingchores.com. Just want to give you, before we get to the comments, just want to give a couple of little shout-outs to a few people that support the Voting Chores here. Garrison Brewing has released their style for this year's Home Brewing Brew-Off competition. And this year's style is the Robust Porter. And for anybody who has done those type of home brew-off, it follows a very specific beer style or guide, so guidelines. So for the beer geeks out there, it is 12B. So it should be pretty interesting what people come up as. It's not quite a stout, but it's a robust porter. And also North Bruin, they were getting ready with Boxing Rock, loading up grain for their Mini Hands 2.0 collaboration brew that they did last year, and we were able to try different variations of. So looking forward to what they will come up for version 2.0. Let's get to some of the comments. Carrie, is there any comments on Voting Chores?
Bluefin is in the house.
All right.
But he's at sea, and he's drinking tea. Okay. And he also says he hopes fracking never comes to Canada, but unfortunately, in some places it already is. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now, I'm sure, now, we do fracking offshore. Nova Scotia does fracking in the ocean. Do we? Don't we? Don't we allow that? But not onshore.
Oh. I don't know.
Any other comments, Carrie, from...
No, that's it.
That's it? All right, that's awesome. All right, good to see Bluefin from Newfoundland in the middle of the ocean, literally.
Watching us live.
Todd, have got any YouTube comments?
We got two. We got one from Doug Oliver.
Doug!
Yeah.
I got a box for you next time you're in town, Doug. I got stuff to give you.
It says, hey, folks, drinking one of my own homebrew from Noble Grape.
Oh.
Roger says, finish off a growler of Patty's Raven Ale. I'm not familiar with that
Raven
one.
Raven Ale.
Mm. Still has a couple of blueberry in the fridge. And Jason Spear says, hi, everyone, having a Bone Shaker IPA.
Bone Shaker.
And he says he's going in the Garrison competition. I need to get my hands on a sample of Robust Porter.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to go down to the bottom of that specification to get some common examples here.
It might be... I'm not sure about the Robust. I think I'm getting confused with regular. So I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly bring up the... styles here, but actually, you know what? Let's. Is any other comments, Todd, on the YouTube?
Not right now, no.
Okay. Let's see here. Just give you commercial examples here for the Robust Porter. The Great Lakes Edmund Fitzgerald Porter, Meantime London Porter, Anchor Porter, which is available at Bishop's Cellar. In Halifax. I saw that the other day. Smutty Nose Robust Porter from Maine. No, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Sierra Nevada Porter. The Chutes Black Butt Porter. Boulevard Bully Porter. Rogue Mocha Porter. Avery New World Porter. Bell's Porter. Great Divide St. Bridge Porter. Etc., etc. So,
I haven't had any of those.
Well, I think the only one we can get right now, if you're in Halifax, is the Anchor Porter at Bishop's Cellar. I saw that last week. So
yeah, they got a lot of Anchor down there, don't they?
Yeah, so that I think we'll have to get down there and at least get an idea of what this Robust Porter is. So, which is basically a stronger, hoppier, and roastier version of the Porter. So if you have ever had a Propeller Porter... just think more of that.
I've made a porter before.
Well, actually, my latest homebrew that's carbon up in the keg downstairs is a porter, also. So, yeah, I like to really see what's considered robust, for sure. All right. Thanks for the commenters. Thanks for everybody coming back. We're back at our normal weekly schedule. So after our summer hiatus, where we used to do every 2 weeks, Moving on to the next story, let's talk about our previous mayor in Halifax. Peter Kelly had to basically resign. Well, not resign. He didn't reoffer because it was a number of scandals and such, and got kind of sticky. So we haven't heard from him really for the last couple of years. At one point, he was working for a pest control company in Lower Sackville, which was, you know, a little bit of a fall from grace. But now we learn that he is the new CAO for a community in Alberta, where a lot of people didn't know all the shenanigans he was into while mayor in Halifax.
He went out there because he's the executor of some of the little ladies well out there, so he'd be busy for the next 2 or 3 years.
So I'll give a little background here to that story. So this was the story that really brought him down, but basically he was an executor to a little old lady's well, and she had a couple hundred grand in her bank account, and he decided to transfer $160,000 of that into his personal bank account and didn't tell anybody.
And not disperse any of it. That was the thing.
And it was like 7 years, and he didn't disperse any of the estate. So, I don't know. Anyway, things got resolved. People complained, and that estate thing kind of got straightened out. And that really just led to his demise there. But it was really interesting does it surprise you that he's in Alberta? Doesn't surprise me, because hell, I'd be going to Alberta too after going through a fall from that.
The rats didn't cut it for him. Wouldn't cut it for me either, though.
Yeah. honestly, was he really going to do pest control in Lower Sackville? Like coming into somebody's house with the white, coveralls and the Orkin man kind of set up. No, he wasn't.
Next thing you know, the TV's gone.
Where do you keep your papers, lady?
But apparently, this was new. Apparently, he had a son that he recently discovered he had that lives in Alberta.
That's right, too. Yeah, yeah.
So,
he gets around.
He got around, so.
Up, down, out west, yeah.
And I guess his other kids that he's aware of are in Alberta too. So, everybody's in Alberta, separated from his wife, and
maybe he wants to meet his kids, which he can't blame him, I guess.
No, don't blame him. Don't blame him. Another person. Oh yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I'll just say good riddance.
Yeah. All done. Until it's official on his driver's license, which flag is on. Yeah. Don't count them chickens or roosters. Another person got into trouble this week, apparently. Apparently not. Sidney Crosby. For some reason, in September, apparently he's in Ottawa, and a news agency was saying that he got arrested in a rented Porsche. Not only arrested, mugshot, and down to the Elgin Street Police Station, which is the only police station in Ottawa, I guess. Well, I can't remember. But anyway, it took a few hours, but people said, no, he's in Colorado training. And which made the story really interesting. What does the locals do? They put a picture of him when he was, 9 years old or whatever, going first day of school.
Making him look like Justin Bieber or something.
Yeah, with his old crew cut haircut. And, next rumor in the story is why was he in Ottawa? He has no business in Ottawa. Why would anybody go to Ottawa this time of year? Not for playing hockey.
Check out the sights down on the market.
Go check out the latest exhibition at the Canadian Museum of History.
Yeah, they stopped playing hockey there about March, don't they?
When they stop caring, it's usually in March, yeah?
Yeah. Stop shining those clubs up.
Actually, they do have a nice nighttime three-par course, nine-hole course called the Thunderbird. Played there once. It was kind of interesting playing golf at 9 o'clock at night. with the spotlights shining, illuminating the field, or the greens. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Todd, let's talk about a little bit. You went venturing in New Brunswick the last couple of days, and let's talk about one of them, which is the main reason you were in New Brunswick to begin with.
Yeah, I went up. I got the invitation from Pump House for their 15th anniversary. They decided to make a stone beer, so it was quite cool to see. They heated the rocks up to between 700 and 1,000 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. Plunked them into wort, and it all bubbled up and smelled wonderful. So should be an interesting ale. It was just interesting to see them do it.
Now just to give people an idea what it was, is that so back in the day, before they figured out how to make copper pots, they had to heat up stones to put in the liquid to warm it up, much like how we would put an ice cube in a glass today, but it's the reverse. We want it to boil by putting stuff in. So that's how they got the water to boil. So did they make a lot of custom gear for this, Todd? Do you know? Or
not a lot. They bought a kiln. Was for part of it, what you'd make, I guess, ceramics in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they got the steel baskets from, but everything else was pretty much, and they had like a big pot, I don't know how many liters it was, where they dunked it in, but it was sucking off the top. Once they were finished, they would suck from the top and bring in new wort from the big tank there.
Okay.
They have a tank that holds about 4,000 bottles, so... So they had to do the whole lot. So they did. They repeated this about 7 times. And I had a taste of the wort. It was pretty good. The rocks were interesting. When they cooled down, they actually were coated with sugar.
Yeah, I was going to say that because that's the main thing. It's like they heat up so fast, you're caramelizing whatever's in the liquid, right?
Yeah, so you have those caramelized rocks afterwards, which are kind of neat.
Now, did they mention that they would, obviously the thing they would reuse those rocks, like they wouldn't necessarily rinse them off or anything like that, or did they rinse them off, or?
They were kind of just leaving them outside. If anybody wanted to take one, you could take one if you wanted.
Got a nice fermenting caramelized rock.
Something to feed the ants in the spring. A lot of people did actually take them up on their offer and took it. They used, Keith would probably know the rocks better than me, gray whack from the Fredericton area.
He sandstone then.
Yeah, and then they actually surprisingly used river stone.
Okay, yeah.
So kind of a mixture. So, interesting to see what the company is doing. Pump House is the biggest craft brewer in Maritimes. And they planted a vineyard 5 years ago. They're going to start making wine, and they have distilling equipment. They're going to start distilling. So they're going to be making all three, your beer, your wine, and your spirits.
Oh, geez. Taking over.
Yeah. So they're going concern. They, they've expanded quite a bit. They're doing a lot of innovative things that people don't do down here, washing their own bottles in plant, which most of them don't. A lot of canning equipment, so they're big into canning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've got a lot going on up there.
Right on. And the other thing that you noticed was the new pilot program at the NB liquor stores.
Yeah, just by happenstance, I went into the Dieppe liquor store, which I usually do when I'm leaving town, just to see what they have. And lo and behold, a nice big shiny stainless steel counter with 3 taps on it. So we'll see how it goes. It's pretty expensive to buy. They only fill their own growlers.
Okay.
And to buy a growler is $10. And then, so that seems very pricey to me.
So it'd be like $20 to fill it up?
Yeah.
Time?
For the first time, yeah. So the way the app put it, which is kind of funny, I didn't laugh though. He says, one tap will be devoted to Pump House, which makes sense. Yeah. One will be devoted to Molson's Craft, because Molson has a plant in Moncton.
Of course.
So it would be like Creemore Springs and... do they have Okanagan, I think? Anyway, it'd be that kind of thing. Or no, they have...
don't they have Granville Island or something?
Blue Moon, Granville Island, yeah. So that'll be their tap, and then there'll be one tap that'll be 1 week. So right now it's Flying Monkeys, Suburbia, I can't think of the name right off. Fredericton, there's going to be one tap
for Picaroons.
Picaroons, thank you. Picaroons, the other P. Picaroons, a Flying Monkey, and I forget what the other one is. Labatt's, maybe? And then Port St. John, they don't have anything at all. Like, they don't have any real craft brewers. They have Moosehead. And they're using disposable plastic kegs.
Oh, I had heard about those disposable ones.
Yeah, they don't want to handle the kegs, so they're just going to basically, when they're done, they're just going to pitch them out in the garbage.
So they're just bladders.
They must be. I didn't open up. They wouldn't let me open the keg grainer. They sure. It's kind of strange. It's not open store hours. It's open basically evenings and from Saturday noon till 9. So, like, for example, it wasn't technically open, although the manager, they have, like, locks on the taps because you can't do your own fill. So, you know, you can't kind of, like, have a little drink
in the
middle. The manager did unlock it. Somebody wanted one. He unlocked it and filled it up for him. And he doesn't agree with it. That's kind of a provincial. It's just a pilot program right now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know how people feel about that.
Well, considering that, you know, a third of the taps is going to be for the big brew that don't necessarily need to.
Yeah.
You know, they're not increasing access to.
No, you know who has the ear of people in the MB Liquor.
Yeah. So it'd be nice a month, you know, to have like. You know, a Celtic Knot, which is a really good brewery. In St. John, you know, they have Hammond River.
Yeah.
Those guys kind of got left out for whatever reason. But again, this is a pilot project, so like I'm telling people that have contacted me, it's like, make sure the manager of the store knows and send an email off. If they're really serious about this, they'll listen to people.
Yeah.
If they're not, they won't anyway, so, but... at least they'll know people's concerns. Like I told the manager, I said, it's kind of crazy not for it to be open store hours, and he agreed with me on that.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the whole point, right? You go...
Friday at lunch? That's your prime time, Jim, Friday at lunch. Like, yeah. If you're a guy going to fill up a growler for the weekend,
yep.
Closed.
Yeah, and what I do, it's true, because what I normally do is I head downtown, I stop either at Garrison or I stop somewhere else in town, and I just fill up, and crazy. So it'd be kind of interesting, but to me, off the bat, you know, price-wise, I don't know if they want a revenue generator rather than a market builder, but I don't know. No, I don't know. It's we'll see how this pilot works out. That's it. It's Friday night hangout, kids. Where we grab a brew and shoot the breeze, and we're back to our weekly schedule. We'll get the boys to reload their pages, and we'll check the comments here. You can comment to us by sending us a tweet, YouTube, Google Plus, or at avoidingchoice.com. Carrie, were there any new comments on Avoiding Choice?
Yes.
What do we have?
Bluefin says, the Stone beer process sounds quite interesting. I hope it makes it here soon. We do get Pump House here, but most of the time, but only a selection or two. And he says, the growler at the liquor store sounds like a good idea, but it's too bad you simply can't use any growler. Yeah, yeah, unless they have a rinsing station there right beside it, you can fill it out and make sure that it's clean, then, yeah, that's one thing. That's like going to the buffet with your plate again.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole growler thing makes me a little bit angry. You know, everybody wants their own branding and everything, but why can't I fill up Brewery B's over at Brewery C's?
Well, or that, or it's like, well, I just happen to have the 1 liter growler instead of the 2 liter.
Yeah.
You know, I just...
It becomes almost a profit center for them, because to buy a growler, I know, is less than a dollar. I don't know what it costs to have it painted in that, but...
Well, considering that most of them will sell them for about $5 when you first get it. You know, when you get a growler and stuff, I think, I tend to remember there, but it's around usually $15 or $16 to get your first growler, first fill up of most of the craft beer, you know, joins it, you know, it's in the area.
Yeah.
You know, at $20, that seems to be a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I wish you could just, like, I've got, like, so many growlers in my house now, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And, I think you should be able to take your growler anywhere, but that's...
Yeah. All right, Todd, what we got for YouTube comments?
YouTube, we've got Dan LaCroix.
Dan!
He says, hey guys, birthday's tomorrow. You all have to sing me happy birthday. He says he's going to be 30-something.
30-something. Oh, might be 30-something. How many 30-somethings left before you hit the 40-something? might be a couple more.
Until you start celebrating the anniversaries of your 39th.
Don't kick a guy when he's down.
No. Well, happy birthday, Dan.
Yeah.
Yes, happy birthday.
We won't sing, we're terrible singers, but...
Enjoy the 30s.
Enjoy that. Dan was in the Maritimes. He took his family, his lovely family, and brought them down to Fundy, I saw, and they went to PEI, La Madeleine, and all that stuff. So
nice trip.
He did the Maritimes big time.
Yes, I can't remember. If he went into Nova Scotia a little bit or not, but
I don't remember either. I know he did the Rocks Fun Day.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Jason Spear says there are no local examples of robust porter.
Okay. So the ones we talked about, Smutty Nose and Anchor, are really the closest ones we can get our hands on.
Yeah, have you got a source up here with Jason? Tell him to run down to Bishop's.
Yeah, Bishop's.
Then Dean S. says, Jamel's robust porter recipe in the BCS book is remarkably simple. The challenge might be to keep it simple and not go off the rails. I think that's the problem with a lot of the beers. You know, some of them are a bit technical, but overthinking it. I for one kind of like this selection. So I'm kind of a fan of that style of beer. So
yeah, well, you know, how can you say no to a hoppier, roastier, porter? No, it's the right time of year too. It's when they judge it. So
yeah,
I like it.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good to get the last year's winner to get their brew out, because I really enjoyed that. So if they can scale it up.
Yeah.
And,
what was the style for that one again? I kind of forgot.
That was...
was that another Belgian kind of style beer?
Yeah, it was Weiss. Was it a Weissen beer?
Yeah.
Shoot, I have to go look it up now. I should remember that. It's with the banana esters and... It was really, really good. I remember tasting it, but I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember.
All right. Any other comments on the YouTube, Todd? Or?
No, not right now.
All
right,
perfect. Hey, let's do a quick mention here that Hal Bay, they're working on the latest the next version of the Ripa, and will be out soon. And I guess we'll make a debut in bottles for the first time. So for those who've been able to try his last couple versions of it, I think, Todd, we've tried a couple over at Stillwell.
So, yeah.
Looking forward to that. Also, our friends at Picaroons, they're at the PI Beer Festival this weekend, and with their limited double IPA, Melonhead, Yippee IPA, and Dark and Stormy Night, so they got their good lineup, but that double IPA, man, I'm interested. You should for sure. All right, let's do a quick round of what we're drinking tonight. Keith, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking the clone that Dean2K sent me, the Rising Tide Brewing Company, the Daymark American Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
Nice floral, really floral, and it's dry hop too, so see what that tastes like. I really enjoy it.
All right, excellent. Carrie, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Grolsch.
Yes. Is that bottle number two?
Number two. I got three of them.
All right, Dos. Todd, what were you
doing? Still working on the Goose Island Honkers Ale.
Oh, okay. Good stuff. Still liking it?
It's very, very good. It's very well balanced.
All right. Excellent. And I am enjoying the Sea Level Blueberry Pale Ale, 5% pale. And let's see if I can get this color again there. I don't know if you guys can see that. Kind of that purple rosé kind of tint to the beer there. So it's their Sea Level Pale Ale with fermented blueberries. So it's good. It's good. Goes down pretty nice. Pretty nice. It's not that artificial blueberry flavor you get. It's the different, more blueberry pie.
I had Gahan from, what's that one? Gahan from PEI.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I had one of those last week, and I wasn't too crazy on it.
I'm finding that all their pumpkin and they do a blueberry and all that stuff. I don't know what it is. I can the extract that they use or whatever. I just don't like the taste of it. Todd, were you a fan of their pumpkin ale?
Gone?
Yeah.
I believe I was. And that was the one that used no pumpkin.
Yeah, there was no pumpkin in it.
Yeah, well, actually, I found out Pump House doesn't use any pumpkin either. They said it's just a huge mess. You don't get any benefit from using pumpkin. Just they use spices.
So the only two that use real pumpkin in the area is Propeller and Sea Level.
Sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right. Okay, this is the next story here that... made the news, they're pushing it a lot, the Kyber Building. And this is a building that I have no idea, I've never been in Halifax. Apparently this was a building where a lot of arts people, different groups met and did stuff. It's over 100-year-old building, 120-something years old. It needs about $4 million of renovations. The city has put it on delayed or... You know, we're not going to maintain this building as often. Anyway, it needs to either get sold or tore down, and all the hipster artists are trying to save it, don't have a real plan, because it needs, $4 million, and, let's pull that up and try to find it. So we get Joel Plaskett. He's fighting hard to save the space. Guys, are you Kyber Building fans, or this is just lost cause?
That used to be the attic, but there's two ways to look at it. You can't save every old building, because a lot of those buildings were not built to last. They're just structurally inferior buildings. The old Chives building, they tore it down. That was a big uproar. That building was not savable. But there's two ways to look at this Kyber Building. They say $4 million to fix it up. Well... what is that towards the cost of a new building?
And what they say never happens, because when they get into it, there's always...
But I don't know. I mean, without knowing actually what kind of condition the building's in and what it needs, I mean, I don't know if it'd be feasible or not.
Exactly.
There's a lot of old buildings around.
Yeah. I've been in it several times. It's a nice old building, but it's not worth saving, not for $4 million. In my opinion. Laws of view. Listen, as long where's Jocelyn? As long as the view planes are maintained.
Well, here, you bring up the point. Where is this heritage group that's fighting? They're not fighting for this building. And I think this comes to the one of the points is that how we deal with our history and how we don't. We don't have a plan to deal with our heritage buildings or preserve them or making sure that they're on a high maintenance list so that we don't get to the point where it needs $4 million to tear it down. We just tear down the Roy building across the street a little while or a block over. Yeah. The Dennis building, which is another heritage building at along Prince Street, that's empty. That's been empty for 2 years.
Well, it's these funny mentality too. Look at the National Fillmore building. Isn't that what it was, the old NF?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the facade, and it's been exposed to the weather for how long now? 20 years since that fire took it out. So they want to save the facade, but really, if there's weather getting at it on both sides, they're going to have to tear that down and rebuild it.
Yeah.
That facade. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saving things if you're just replacing, you know, maybe you're replacing the facing of it or whatever. But like I said before, a lot of these buildings aren't built to save. They're actually sinking around the frame.
Yeah.
You know, they're built out of bricks or stones, and they're actually sinking into the ground around the wooden frames.
Yeah.
There's nothing left to save, really.
And another building in Halifax, the public library. You know, that's the whole reason.
I don't know what will happen to that.
Yeah, that's the whole reason why they built the new thing, because it was the other one is too old to save, and that's only 50 years old, or however old the building is.
A lot of those 50-year-old concrete buildings are coming to the end of their lifespan, and they were meant to last longer than that.
Mm. Harsh weather out here.
Look at inferior concrete. The concrete just didn't hold up, and look at St. Pat's.
Yeah.
In Quimpole, it's not an old building. What's it, 50, 60 years old? Yeah. That's not old for a building.
No.
And it's at the end of its cycle? I don't know.
But it's just funny now that you have these heritage trusts that was so adamant on Nova Center. They just don't care about, you know, they haven't said anything about the one building that's like a block from it. Not even a block from it. So, yeah, it's just the priorities to me. I don't know.
Who takes a shine to the building and who doesn't, basically?
Yeah.
You're looking at old things trying to redo them. I mean, they say $4 million to upgrade it. In the end, it could be more than that. You'll never know until you start doing a renovation and to find out what is the problem.
Well, like, it'd be like the Blue Nose of buildings. It's never going to
exactly.
be up to modern code, ever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Never going to be completely.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. All right, next topic, CBC Halifax. It must be sweeps week. This is where all the radio stations suddenly get money and they're doing all these contests and stuff. CBC, for some reason, they're spending like a week on Sable Island because there's a lot of Sable Island content coming up. And I was reading a very nice history lesson from John Paddry. He was talking about how in the 17, maybe earlier, they put a little settlement on Sable Island, about 70 people.
Maybe he got shipwrecked there.
No, didn't get
shipwrecked. Another reporter. I say maybe the reporter got shipwrecked there.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a very interesting story. I should put up the link there, but if you're on CBC from the link that's on the Hangout, you'll be able to find it here. But why was on this interest in Sable Island? Like, you know, it got put as a national park, and it's ridiculously expensive to get out there, and
maybe they want to frack on it.
Oh.
It's a 3-hour tour.
Yeah, it's been through various life cycles. They let different animals live there, kind of as a like a resupply station. They'd pull up alongside, they'd row in, they'd shoot a couple of pigs or whatever that was living there, and bring them back out, have fresh meat on the boat, and away they would go. And a lot of, so, and I think there maybe was a small, I can't believe that there's actually a permanent settlement out there, but
It only lasted for like a couple of years from this history article there. So
yeah, I could see seasonally, like for whaling and stuff, where they could pull in, you know, to resupply with water without coming all the way in here, all the way to Gloucester, and you know, fill up with water, maybe some meat, because rabbits were infested out there for a while, and you know, it would save them a long lot of time.
Well, I'll try to dig out that article, but it's John Tatry. He did an article on CBC history article. Anyway, if you can find it, it's well worth a read. Very interesting early settlement history on Sable Island. Let's do a quick another story, and then we'll do comments, and because we're getting that close to the end of the show. Lego is the world's largest toy company, surpasses Mattel. Quite a bit. And surprise you guys that Lego is king. Surprised me a little bit.
It's pretty diverse for the age ranges it can reach to, and you know, it's pretty versatile toy. It was my favorite toy growing up. I never got bored of it.
So I never had Legos.
So. I had Meccano.
I enjoyed my Lego. It's probably still in use. That stuff, you can't destroy it.
It's tough. Yeah, it doesn't degrade much, no.
But I know there's a couple of huge Lego enthusiasts at work, and they're really into Lego, and they took their kids to Legoland, and you know, they collect it and build it, and
well, and they're smart now too. They have all the, I mean, years ago they had, you know, two or three themes, but now they get behind the movie franchises and market that. And I mean, they're smart. They sell by the truckload that way.
Yeah, true. That's so true. Speaking of the Lego movie, we watched it a little while ago. That was a very entertaining movie, I gotta admit. That was nice. Yeah. It was good. A lot of inside jokes for the adults who've been, as Todd says, you know, kept the Lego fire burning within. Let's do a quick round of comments, boys, and then we'll start shutting it down. Just a reminder as they refresh the pages that if you're watching live, the replay will start about 10-15 minutes once we're actually done the hangout. We also have the audio-only podcast version of this show that you can download on your favorite podcast listening device. And again, we're back to our weekly schedule, so we're going to be back next Friday at the usual time. Kerry, do we have anything on avoidingchores.com?
Nothing.
Nothing. All right, Mike.
It is silent.
All right, Mike's done for the night. Finished his milk, went to bed. Ty, what we got? Any new comments?
We just got one from Roger. He says, I thought $10 deposit for growlers and $10 to fill was pretty much standard. What kind of deals are you guys getting?
Jesus. Half price.
Usually?
Yeah, I thought they were only around $5. Well, yeah. To buy them, you don't really put a deposit. Well, I guess North is kind of a deposit. They do exchanges.
Five or six. Yeah.
They cost. Well, I know it costs a company about. I think it's about 50 cents a growler, and then I don't know what it costs to paint them, but.
Yeah.
They're making a lot of money on a growler.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I can see their point though. I mean, if they're selling them too cheap, you're like, well, hell, I'll go get 20 growlers for my home group. And, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I guess when you think about it that way, yeah.
Hmm. But anyway, I still don't
agree with not filling other people's growlers. That's my contention.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the very last topic, and then we'll start to wind it down for this week. Ebola. Ebola is this close, guys, of getting out of control in Africa. The health agencies are just can't, put a handle on this. We have more Ebola patients being flown over to the U.S. for the experimental treatment, and I'm sure they all have certain characteristic that they get the treatment, and because we're not hearing anything on how the treatment's going in Africa, Liberia, anything like that. So people were fearing, oh, don't worry about Ebola. It will never come to North America. It's
people get
off planes, don't they? But if we're flying people over, it's like, I've seen movies with Dustin Hoffman and Morgan Freeman. You know, it's stuff outbreaks, you know, it gets out.
Yeah, snake on a plane.
Yes, yeah, snake on a plane.
You're just sitting there and all of a sudden the cobra bites you.
Yeah, it happens. But anyway, guys, did you expect, like, you know, they're saying now they're about, you know, that they know about 3,000 affected people with Ebola. Largest, you know, who knew Ebola?
Well, it's been around for a while. It's, you know, it's pretty brutal. It's, you know, the fact that more of these are out of control is a surprise to me.
They say it won't take off here because we're more clean.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, like the main, but the last two are the people that they're flying over. These are people that don't necessarily dealt with the Ebola patients out there. They were like in completely different areas, but as you said, Todd, you know, like the main, you know, transmission, which is fluids and
direct contact, basically.
And blood, you know, stuff that we don't normally, you know, deal with or, you know, try to avoid. We actually try to avoid other people's fluids in blood. So
yeah, I definitely did try.
Yeah, do my best.
It's a scary thought when you see something that's Hollywood is sensationalized, the Dustin Hoffman in Outbreak and a couple other movies like that. There that it could happen. I mean, it's even the Ebola, the contact ones, or if you get one that's, like they say, the airborne ones, well, you don't know what you're going to get.
Well, you know, we can break it down. It's whooping cough, measles. Is it typhoid Mary? They're making back, like these diseases are, they're coming back, and they may not be the most, you know, sexy or scary ones like Ebola, but you know, those ones are coming back.
Well, that's the thing. People's resistances to them disappeared because the disease disappeared. There's no immunity. You're not born with any immunity. Your parents didn't have the immunity. And then in some places, vaccines are either ignored or don't exist. So, of course, these things are going to come around again.
You get people with the hype saying that they don't want to vaccinate their children because they're scared of all the other diseases or something that will happen to their children because they get it.
I think you get
scared. The scare tactics of those things.
Not to vaccinate.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, talking about the mercury in a shot, and I'm sure we get just as much mercury eating a piece of salmon. So, anyway, all right, boys, we're just gonna cut it off for this week, since we're about the 1 hour mark. This is pretty much the length of the hangout, but we want to keep it nice and easy. Again, just a big thank you for the panel for joining me again for another good hangout. Thank you for all the people watching, commenting. Do appreciate you sitting through either primary screen or secondary screen and following and commenting there. Again, replay will start in about 10-15 minutes, and then we'll have the audio podcast. Do make sure you subscribe. Do make sure you listen to that. It is quite entertaining when you just have the audio version on it. So, all right, like to thank the boys here. Before we go, though, just want a quick shout-out to the Ladies Beer League. They're involved in that first annual Atlantic Canada Beer Awards on October 5th at the Stubborn Goat. And we'll get Todd to talk more about that on the next edition of the Maritime Beer Report. And Todd had a couple of news items earlier, but you can always check out his blog at maritimebeerreport.blogspot.ca. Is that it, Todd? Was that right?
Somebody wake him up.
Yeah. Moose Island.
It's .com. It's .com, I think. Yeah. .com. No, it is .ca. Sorry. Right. MaritimeBeerReport.blogspot.ca. Thank
you. All right. You should look into a domain name, Todd.
Yeah.
Unless somebody goes and buys it like in the next 20 minutes. So.
Yeah.
Don't give anybody ideas.
all my enemies.
And also, quick shout out to the Trail Shop here. Their Bay of Fundy Sea Kayak Symposium is happening, I believe, this weekend. So check out their website for details for that. So that's thetrailshop.com. All right. Thank you, panel. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll do this again next Friday, 9:30 p.m. Atlantic time. So thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you guys later.
Later.
Au revoir.